back in on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Canucks preseason coverage brought to you by Tiletown as BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season. Receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details. Big week for us coming up on Wednesday. We're going to be at Park in the lead-up to the home opener.
Let's go.
At Rogers Arena. So if you're looking for somewhere to stop by before the game, we'll be at Park on Wednesday as it's opening week in the National Hockey League. Couple of games over the weekend in Europe between the Devils and Sabres. Devils swept both. Sabres 0-2 to start the year, and the Devils' social media admin was absolutely ruthless with the Sabres 0-2 start, as is on trend for these days. But the Canucks, they won't get started till Wednesday. Full slate of games tomorrow night gets going as well. But we focus on the Canucks here, and that's let's get to the open.
Welcome to the open.
Four! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The Open on Canucks Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And the Canucks set their opening day roster today, Sat. And I don't know if there's too many surprises here. I mean, Arshdeep Bains made as strong of a case as he possibly could with the way that he played Friday night in the preseason finale against the Edmonton Oilers. But it ends up with him getting assigned to Abbotsford alongside Eric Brännström and Yuri Patera, who was reclaimed off waivers today from the Boston Bruins. And the following players placed on season-opening injured non-roster: Dakota Joshua and Thatcher Demko, who remain hurt. That means Atu Ratu has made the opening day roster for the Vancouver Canucks.
But has he?
That's kind of the question. As Patrick Alvin alluded to today, Rick Tocchet hasn't ultimately decided who's going to be in his opening night lineup.
That was my big takeaway. As much as, yes, today they announced the opening day roster, it's the submission that you have to make on opening day for your roster. And
has a lot of cap implications.
Yeah, cap implications, roster, like setting your roster implications, like things that you would do to begin the season may not be things that you do on day two of the season, just because of just whatever machination you're going through as a team. So that was my takeaway, is don't fully read everything into the fact that Ratu is still here and Bains is not. Could that switch by Wednesday? It's a possibility. Or maybe we see Ratu still here and maybe he does play his first game. Could it also be somewhat related to the uncertain status around Connor Garland?
The coach hasn't practiced.
Yeah. Now, the coach said he's been skating and it should be okay. It's something minor. But what if they want to be cautious and not play him on Wednesday? Could that play a factor? So I think in terms of what we're going to see on Wednesday, that is still not a fully painted picture. But what it leads us to is the situation the Canucks find themselves in, where about a week or a few days ago, we were talking on Friday and even, you know, on Thursday's show about the Canucks heading into this season are not going to be able to have a full roster because of the salary cap. If they want to stay out of LTIR, they literally cannot carry more than 21 players. That's what you can do. Otherwise, you have to go into LTIR. And it was really dependent on the status of Hirose. Hirose got sent down. Yep. Suter looks like he's going to be fine. So they're okay in that aspect. But they made the trade to move Tucker Pullman's contract out. And ultimately, that's what allowed them to have flexibility here in terms of having a 23-man roster, still being able to play with the roster ahead of Wednesday's game, and the fact that even today, with a full roster and two players on IR, the Canucks have $470,000 of cap space.
Yeah, per Puckpedia, it is at $479,000 for the Canucks. That's with 13 forwards, 8 defensemen, and two goalies on the roster. Of course, Dakota Joshua and Thatcher Demko on season opening IR. So that's a lot. And really, like, you know, the Pullman deal, they get Eric Brännström back. They still have to retain a little bit on Tucker Pullman in in $500,000 retained, which adds to, you know, already over $3 million of dead cap space in OEL and Mikheyev that the Canucks are carrying. But ultimately, what matters today is that it gets them under the salary cap. And not just flexibility so that they can accrue cap space as the season goes on, but, you know, if you have a couple of injuries, you don't have to then go into LTIR. Like, you can manage through an injury or two and still maybe, you know, have some cap space to deal with, and you're not really working against yourself with LTIR all season long.
Now, obviously, it's all dependent on health.
Yeah.
You can still have a number of injuries and they compound. The next thing you know, you find yourself into LTIR. That can still happen. You know, you can do
sometimes
your best.
You can't avoid it.
Yeah. I mean, you can do your best and have some cap space. But if the injuries mount, at some point you run into that problem. Hopefully that's something they don't run into. Now, this can change dramatically between today, which, you know, we're starting to look at first day of the league year or the league season, regular season, and the trade deadline. But even if the Canucks are only holding on to 480,000, or let's say 500,000 of cap space,
yeah,
from now to the deadline, that becomes $2.5 million, roughly.
Yeah.
Could be more, could be slightly less, $2 million, like somewhere in that range, $2 to $2.5 million. That's on the low end.
Mm-hmm.
And as if they get healthy, we can be sitting here talking about a situation where the Canucks at the trade deadline have upwards of $5 million in cap space, maybe even more. Now, that is dependent on health. Again, how many days we could be under the cap for that to accrue. But they find themselves in a position now where not only is their roster solid, not only do they have flexibility and they don't have to be undermanned because of cap issues, but they are going to be able to accrue some meaningful cap space by the trade deadline. And we saw last year at the trade deadline, the biggest commodity teams were lacking was cap space.
Yeah.
Teams are willing to give you guys for free if you would take them off their hands.
Yep.
But nobody had cap space.
And that's where the Jason Zucker trade ends up happening, right? Nashville gets Zucker for basically nothing because
they'd rather get the money off the books than get a, you know, a third or a fourth round draft pick.
Yeah, and no other team could take on all of Zucker's cap space. So a pretty, interesting, valuable middle six kind of piece ends up going for nothing at the deadline just because there's not enough teams that are under the salary cap and able to acquire that kind of a contract. And even this year, I don't know the exact number last year, but it felt like more than 10 teams started the season already in LTI to start last season. It's only six right now today.
Yeah, and that's going to maybe change. And we'll see how it all impacts over the course of the season. But there is a path here where the Canucks can actually even send one of these guys. Like, I'm actually a bit surprised that the Canucks have 23 players on the roster, or may have 23 players on the roster heading into the season. Because if they subtract one player off the roster and send him down, then their cap space becomes $1.31 million.
Yeah.
And that at the deadline becomes $5-6 million. If you can get that up to $2 million over the course of the year, you're talking about $8 to $10 million maybe at the deadline. Now, it's going to be hard to get to that number because, again, health needs to happen. But you're in a position here where that is a possibility. It's a plausible scenario here for Vancouver heading into the trade deadline. And could you imagine what this front office could do if they have $5, $6, $7 million, $8 million even in actual functional cap space?
They're operating like a team that knows it's in a Stanley Cup contending window.
Yeah.
And that's one of the takeaways from all the moves that they've been making is they are very much aware of where they sit in the standings, what type of opportunity is ahead of them this year, and they're doing everything possible to maximize that. Like, were they necessarily there a year ago today? No. Like, last year it was, can we get to the playoffs? If everything goes right, we'll be a playoff team sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they get off to that great start, and all they do is add to the roster to try and make sure that they don't waste the great start that they had, and they ride it all the way to a Pacific Division win. And who knows what happens if not for Demko getting hurt and Elias Pettersson forgetting how to play hockey for a couple of months to a certain extent. So all that in the past, and now they operate the way that they operate. Archdeep Baines, as Patrick mentioned it today in his avail, still very much in the mix. Rick Tocchet, when he's been asked about Phil DiGiuseppe, he said he's still in the mix. There is the question about Connor Garland. When the Canucks get back to practice, maybe we'll have a better idea of whether or not Garland is going to be ready for opening night, whatever kept him out of Friday's game against Edmonton, where he was slated to play and then tweaked something in practice, as Rick Tocchet said. Is he going to go? I think those are some of the things that the Canucks are trying to figure out before they ultimately set their roster for opening night. But a lot of yesterday's move to get Tucker Pullman off the books and bring in Eric Branstrom was about the salary cap space. But it, like Brännström, the guy was the centerpiece of a deal that sent Mark Stone to the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, this is a big time prospect.
Was a big time prospect.
Was a big time prospect. You know, producer Zach, as our resident Ottawa Senators fan, thought Eric Brännström was going to be the next Erik Karlsson. It just felt like the natural progression.
The second coming, the former first round pick in 2017. I mean, that was 7 years ago now.
Oh my God. Talk about feeling old.
Like, looks great on right wing. Yeah, to play that for the Senators.
Oh man. Like, he's a very talented player. There's no doubt.
But he's 25 now.
Yeah.
Has been up and down from the NHL. Has obviously not rounded out his game well enough to the point where he can play big minutes at the NHL level. And as soon as the Canucks acquire him, they put him on waivers and send him down to Abbotsford. But that doesn't mean, like, could he be a helpful piece to this roster?
He gives them a depth, puck-moving defenseman who can play real NHL games and can run a power play. And right. That's good to have. You know, like, I think he's a more talented player than Christian Willanen.
Mm-hmm.
Similar ilk, though, where it's like, you know, you have some questions about his all-around game. You have some questions about where he can play. But you know he can move the puck. And if he has to play on the power play, he can do so. I think Brännström has a little bit more higher-end skill than he has. But Willanen has size on yeah. Brännström. And that's the other factor here on Brännström. And when you heard Patrick Alvin talk about him, when he spoke with the media, about how internally they discussed the possibility of pursuing Brännström as a free agent, but never did, because ultimately they didn't think he was a fit on the blue line. And I think many factors. And we talked about Brännström during the summer as well, about is he a guy that Canucks should go after? And I'm like, in terms of a puck-moving defenseman, sure, as depth, but do you see a guy who's 5'10", who is not very physical,
mm-hmm.
is not great defensively,
no,
doesn't play on the power PK,
yeah,
and has two guys ahead of him on the power play, and on unit one on Hughes, and Hronek on unit two, like, where does he fit?
Yeah.
Do you see this guy having success under Rick Tocchet? And our response was, no, like, I don't see the fit in Vancouver. I like the player, I don't see the fit in Vancouver. As depth, it's fine. You have an Abbotsford, injuries happen, you have somebody to call up on, but he's not a player they view as a solution.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess it gives you a little bit of depth in the unfortunate happenstance. Maybe you have to fill in for Quinn Hughes for a little bit of time. Maybe Brännström can help you there, you know, tide that over. Obviously, if any star player were to go down for any length of time, those are hard injuries to overcome for any team. But now you have a little bit more of a player profile that can help fill some of those puck moving minutes, some of the power play time yeah. in an Erik Brännström.
Yeah, and if injuries happen,
yeah,
you know, like, this is a guy who the last 2 years played 76 and 74 games.
Yeah,
it's not like he hasn't played.
Some
real
people
NHL
are like, and I know analytically his profile has improved over the last couple of years, and it's something we talk about often off air with guys that play sheltered minutes against lower end opposition. Maybe they're getting offensive zone time. It's really hard to trust that the analytics are showing you a proper picture of what this player would be if, you know, they had to find themselves playing 20 minutes a night against some of top competition on opponents.
Yeah, the issue isn't his skill, his puck moving, his puck rushing ability. Yeah. It's how he plays defensively, how he understands the game defensively, and how he loses his position oftentimes. Doesn't win enough battles. Like, those are the things yeah. ultimately that keep him from being a legitimate NHL defenseman.
And bottom line, if a team is deciding between players on a third pair defensively, like Derek Forbert or Erik Brännström, like, I know who the more talented player is.
Yeah, no doubt.
But who's going to bring you more tangible value on the ice? Who's going to play big PK minutes for you and, you know, not force you into playing Quinn Hughes or somebody else, you know, that's going to have to block down, get down and block shots in those kinds of minutes. Like, you know, that's where a guy like Forbert gets a lot more NHL credibility than these types of players. So it could be a helpful piece, but yeah, that's the story on the piece coming back in the Pullman trade. Nils Höglander gets a 3-year deal with the Vancouver Canucks, an extension worth $9 million in total. And I know we got a bunch of tweets yesterday. Oh, you guys got to stop trading Nils Höglander now. He gets an extension. And for the record, I mean, we only answer questions here on the show, okay? And hypothesize some avenues that can potentially pop up. But you know, Nils Höglander's position in this organization was not very solid when Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford came in. They sent him down to Abbotsford. He's worked his you-know-what off to get himself back to the NHL and make himself a bigger part of this roster. He's been getting a ton of praise through training camp and preseason again. Looks like he's going to be a piece that fits into the middle six, helps with the Canucks scoring, and hopefully, you know, he continues to work on, you know, his off-puck skills that have maybe, you know, that have at times held back coaches' trust in him, going all the way back to Travis Green. But this is a good story of development from the Vancouver Canucks. It's a good story for Nils Höglander. And now you see if he can bring you value on a three-year extension.
My biggest question with Höglander this year, and we discussed it, was what type of decision do the Canucks make on him? By the end of the season, he has a strong ARB case because of the 24 goals. No matter how you looked at this season, even if he had 10, 15 goals, he's in line to make at least mid to high $2 million. Mm-hmm. On an arbitration case. Like, that's what he probably would be awarded, which is very close to $3 million per season. So in terms of signing a player to the low end of his range, that's kind of where the Canucks got him, slightly more than low end, but certainly below the high end. If he has another 20, we're talking $4 million plus.
Yeah.
So what the Canucks did was lock in on the lower end of his value this offseason for 3 years. Now, he's going to be UFA at the end. That's the payoff where he's taking three, where he's going to be UFA at the end, where he's going to be able to demand significantly more if he has a good 2 or 3 years. So he's going to be in an even stronger position. So maybe you give up a little bit now in terms of the AAV, but you get maybe a big payday in 3 years, whether it's Vancouver or elsewhere, yeah, right?
It's a show me bridge contract.
Yeah, and I think that gives him, with the cap going up, like, there's a lot of motivation there for Nils Höglander. My questions with Nils Höglander is sustainability. And if he's not going to be a player that moves into your top six consistently, I have a cap on how much I want to pay those players.
Yeah.
Especially if they don't play special teams. And that's why this year, for me to feel comfortable paying Höglander long term would be, does he get more minutes? Does he show he's a sustainable scorer? And can he play with good players consistently? If he does those things, I would have no issue committing to him. But the way the Canucks committed to him for $3 million, there isn't a ton of risk to it. I know people are bringing this up as a tradable contract. Yes, it is, but he still has to play well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's a situation where if Höglander has 10, 15 goals that you can trade him easily this offseason. Like, I don't think that's the case. So I think now the pressure is the kid has to show he's worth the money. And if he is, I mean, who knows what it looks like in a year's time or whatever it is, right? But I wouldn't think about the trade stuff until he shows he's worth the money. And I think that's still going to be, you know, what he has to do over the course of the season.
Like, the perception of players can change so quickly. You know, if Nils Höglander, for whatever reason, gets off to a slow start, other teams are just going to view him, oh, he's an undersized wing who's not scoring very much, doesn't have any PK value. Like, what do I need this guy for?
He has to play well.
You know, so, like, he has to play well. He has to continue driving value and driving play at 5-on-5 and doing the kinds of things we've seen him do pretty well. You know, like, he was driving Pettersson's line for a while last year with how well he was playing. He really was driving a lot of Canucks results in the bottom six at the start of last season. Him and Sam Lafferty having a ton of success in that small-time role. But now he's going to have to do it at a bigger level to bring value on this contract and still show that he is somebody that's desirable to other teams in the league if, you know, that conversation should come up again.
I kind of, what I saw comp-wise when I looked at what he signed and I looked at comparable players, it was Kyler Yamamoto, mm-hmm. who similar build, similar size, also had similar point scoring. He had a 20-goal year, 41 points, and the years prior, similar scoring rate to what Nils Höglander has done, not too dissimilar. And, hey, everyone thought he's going to be this top six guy. It didn't quite work out. Now, that's the baseline, I think, the comp for getting the contract. You'd hope that Höglander, and I think what he has shown is he's a more tenacious forechecker. I think he's a guy that, even if he doesn't score, can play a third-line role, be a really good checker and bring energy and be a guy that gets under the opposition's skin, which is something that a guy like Yamamoto didn't have. And I think that's part of the reason why they gave him this contract too, Dan. It's not just about the scoring. I think under Tocchet, under the way they want to play as a team, and how physical he can be for a smaller guy. And for all this talk for Höglander being small, and we saw him in training camp, like, he's not like 5'8", 5'9". He's still like 5'10", maybe 5'11". And he's a stocky guy. Like, yeah. He's not a guy that looks diminutive when he's out there on the ice.
Yeah, and you know he is strong on the puck. You know, when he does get to it, he's smart about the way that he forechecks. Like, there's a lot to like about Höglander, and he seems to be a willing learner and a willing player to understand where he needs to get better in order to maximize his value. So yeah. There's some pretty good things about Nils Höglander, and a lot to like about this deal that the Canucks signed here with this young player. All right, Canucks Central roundup. As mentioned earlier, the Canucks got Yuri Patera back from Boston on waivers. They immediately sent him to Abbotsford. So the way that it works is if you get a player claimed off waivers and that player ends up going back on waivers with the team that had acquired him previously, you can put in a claim again on your player that used to be your player that just got claimed by another team. And you can immediately send them to the AHL without having to pass through waivers if no other team puts in a claim on that player. Does that all make sense?
Yes.
And that's what the Canucks did with Yuri Patera.
Yeah.
So it worked out well for them.
So the concerns about goalie depth, no longer a concern.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, depth-wise, heading into this season, the Canucks have like all their bases covered.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible the way that they've set things up for this team. And it's why Patrick Alvin has been getting a lot of praise on the Dunbar Lumber text box, on Canucks Twitter, for the way that he has set up this roster for the Canucks this year. Zach said, let's see how that sounds in two times speed, the whole explanation of Yuri Patera on waivers.
It's going to be very fast, very quick.
I'm sure somebody's already on it. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Coming up, the GM of your Vancouver Canucks. And we'll get to the Canucks Central over-unders after 5:30. We'll set the numbers and discuss where we think some players are going to be over or under the numbers that we set for them. Still to come in a loaded second hour of the program, it's Canucks Central on Sportsnet 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Bick Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Canucks Central final segment here on Sportsnet 650. I gotta say, I made a cardinal sin in fantasy football.
Oh, what did you do now?
So in the Sportsnet 650 league, I was up against our fearless leader, Canberra. I had 96 points after the Thursday nighter, thanks to Kirk Cousins, Drake London, and Mike Evans.
96?
Yeah. And I texted Cam that night and be like, guess the week is already over for you.
Oh, no.
Mm-mm. The rest of my team could not even muster another 40 points.
So you lost.
And I lost.
Oh, that's the worst.
By a point yesterday.
You can't talk trash too soon.
Oh, man.
You know, you just can't talk trash too soon.
I fell into that trap, man. I was celebrating before it was time to, but yeah, didn't expect Breece Hall and Aaron Jones to both suck in London. Anyways,
Cam did the same thing to me week three.
Oh, did he?
43-point comeback due to Nico Collins.
Well, I guess our fearless leader has a penchant for fantasy football. Good for him.
Yeah, he might have. I mean, he's, you know.
Good for him.
Did something right this week.
I'm not angry about it. All right, moving on. Canucks Central over-unders. Here on Canucks Central. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through every single player on the Canucks roster and some on the bubble. And Sat's got a number for them. We'll decide if they are going to go over or under that number.
So do I read them out and you guys say it?
May as well. All
right.
Well, you got to be in on it,
too. Do you want me to read them out?
I mean, would you prefer to do that?
I mean, well, like, what?
Okay, fine. You go ahead and do it.
Okay, Josh.
I'll do it.
That's my job.
I think that sounds better
okay,
if I do it.
Fine.
Then you guys can react as if Sat didn't put this together and has already thought about it a bunch.
Now, you don't have to go in sequential order necessarily. Like, okay. I don't know if you want to use all the good ones right away and then we get, you know what I mean? So, like, you curate them as we go.
Should I? So I'll sparse out the good ones is what you're saying?
Yeah, like, let's not do, like, you know, Patterson, Miller, Besser, you know.
And then
move on to
the other ones?
Yeah, it's okay. Kind of, you know, mixing
up. So why don't we start with the guy who just signed the contract, Nils Höglander.
Okay.
19.5 goals. Over or under?
Yeah.
Nils Höglander for 19.5 goals. I feel like my brand suggests that Höglander is going to be under the number because I've talked about his shooting percentage as much as I have. 19.5 goals. Can he get to 20 again this year? They've just given him the contract. Looks like he's going to be playing a role with Connor Garland. Yeah. So that's, you know, a pretty valuable role. Can he get himself up to 15, 16 minutes a night this year, even if he doesn't play a big part of power play time? 20 goals is a lot, man.
Yeah.
He's going to be right on the number. You know what? I'm feeling optimistic about Nils today. I'm going to go over Nils Höglander. He gets 21 for the season.
Okay. Well, at least we're both not going to say under then, because I'll take the under. I mean, the number I have for Höglander this year, looking at it, was 18 goals.
Okay. So he's right there.
He's right there. Like, he might get 20, but if I had to, like, put my money on it, my projection is 18, so I'll say under 19.5.
I'm also going under, but I'm going to say 19.
19. Wow, look at us.
Just shy.
So he said 20. Yeah. I said 18. You 21. Said 19. Zach, 21. What? Whoa, 21. Are you going to take 20 then, Zach?
Actually, yeah.
Okay.
That's right on.
All right.
Okay, go team. Next one, we'll go with one of the big guys. JT Miller, over under 81.5 points.
This feels like an easy over for me.
Yeah, is it that easy though? Like, if he's going to play more of a matchup role and he's more committed to being a two-way player.
Yeah.
And he said himself, like, I'll happily has scored 20 fewer points, which actually puts him at 83.
Yeah. I mean, he's still JT Miller power play merchant though, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I view JT as like a 90-point guy. Like, that's who I think he is as a guy, as he is as a player.
Should the over-under be higher than 81.5?
I think it should. Okay. I was surprised when I saw this.
Well, I mean, like I said, I put numbers in. You guys could always...
I would say, like, if I was setting an over-under, like, I might lean 90, but I'll go, like, 89.5.
89.5. Okay, let's set the over-under at 88.5.
Okay. Okay.
Are you going to say 89 points? Is that why?
No, I'm taking the under on it. Okay. What about you?
I'm still going over on that.
So what I have for JT this year is 86 points.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it's a good season.
Yeah.
That's not, you know.
I mean, still point of game.
Yeah, it's still really good. You know? And if he's a good two-way center, you know, sacrifice a little bit of it.
Yeah, he was a good two-way center last year.
Yeah, he was.
Right? I know, like, the talk about him, he had the highest PDO of any player in the league. And it was like 105 or 106 or something like that. Cool. Even if it regresses a little bit, I mean, he was over 100 points last year, still going to be an elite power play guy. I see JT is over 90 points this year.
All right. I'm going over too.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the 90s. Next one we'll do. Let's do, Teddy Bluger. We're going off the board.
Oh, let's do Bluger.
8.5 goals, over under. We could be quick with this one.
I'll take the under. So his career high is 9.
Okay.
So that's why I put it 8.5.
You're setting career high.
Yeah, is he gonna tie his career high? If he plays with Joshua comes back and he's gonna be a fixture with Joshua and Garland, like, that's his pathway to scoring.
Yeah.
Having a career high in goals.
It looks like he's labeled to the fourth line role.
Yeah.
I think Bluger is gonna be under that number.
Yeah, I have him at 7.
I'm going to say over because I feel like he ends up playing with Joshua and Garland Moore. I'm going too hard on overs, though.
Yeah, that's classic Josh move.
I'm just optimistic, man.
Classic square pants.
Connor Garland, 49.5 points, over under.
This is a good number that you said here for Garland. So he's been, I think, 46. He's like right around this number every single year as a Vancouver Canuck. There's no reason to think Garland shouldn't be, especially if he plays a full complement of games. I guess my question is, like, is there more, like, how much more can Garland really give you?
I think it's tough, right?
Yeah.
Like, I have him in the 40-point range, so I'm taking the under on it. Like, I don't think he gets 50.
Yeah.
Because, again, power play time, and if it's only 5-on-5, that's kind of Höglander's thing, too. Like, he scored so many goals 5-on-5 with limited minutes, it's going to be hard to replicate.
Yeah.
So unless he's playing meaningful power play time, too, like, it's hard to make up for the shooting percentage even normalizing a little bit. And that's my thing with Garland. Like, I think he's a 40-point guy.
Yeah.
I think 50 is going to be tough.
I'm gonna label Garland for 44 points this year.
Okay,
another strong season, but not over the 50-point mark.
I think we're all going under here. Next one, Daniel Sprong. This is fun, Seth. 13 and a half minutes which per
would be,
game.
Yeah, which would be, for a full season, a career high for Daniel Sprong.
So I was interested, like, when Taka was asked about Sprong after the Friday game and using him in the last few minutes, mm-hmm. and he says, you know, we tried it. He kind of got lost a little bit in his own end. And I went back and watched some of those shifts closely and, like, watched for Sprong. And
you're like, yeah, I see it.
He got really lost.
He did.
He was not having a fun time.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the most...
this is an adventure.
Just so people know, the most minutes he's played in a season where he's played, like, you know, 40 to 60 games is 1259.
Yeah.
So 13 and a half would be the most he's played, like, in a full season, right? His career numbers are 1157.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know what? I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to take the over.
Oh.
I'm taking the over.
I'm going under.
Because I think he's going to get power play time, too, on power play, too. And I think that he might get hot enough on the top line with Pettersson, and the Canucks might be good enough where you live with it for quite a time, right? And then maybe come playoff time and later, there's certain things that you worry about. But I'll be optimistic and think, you know, it clicks more for Sprong.
I'm going to use Höglander as a bar. And, like, once Höglander got to Pettersson's line and stayed there last year, he was over 13 minutes a night. So if Sprong is able to stay in the top six for a majority of the season, he's going to hit this number on the over.
Okay. Why don't we – let's go with a few young players.
All right.
In a row here.
Let's go some young guys.
And these are games over-unders.
Okay.
Jonathan Lekkerimäki, 25 games, over or under.
I'm taking the under.
I feel like that's an easy under, right?
Yeah, I think so, too. It's an easy. But, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, I thought it would be stupid to make it like 10 or 12.
Yeah.
You know, roll to, you know, take depth, over on
depth 10. Is the name of the game.
Like, is he good enough that if he comes in, say, in 15, 20 games, he sticks?
Yeah. I feel like it's hard for me to project this much. Not that, like, this is going to be this way forever, but if there's a early injury on the right wing and they need to bring somebody up, Carlson's getting that call up.
Yeah. I could see that, especially if early on they're like, hey, just keep working on your game.
Yeah. And I feel like that's the way they want to go with Lekkerimäki. And it's probably the best way to go with Lekkerimäki and see where he's at. Maybe in the latter half of the year and you're like, this guy could really help us towards the playoffs. Maybe if he's having a really strong season in the AHL. But ultimately, I think this is still a very much development year for Lekkerimäki. So I'm saying under.
Next one, Atu Ratu, 40 and a half games.
I'll take the under again because I think it's a lot of games. But he's on the opening night roster.
Yeah.
Now, will he be there on Wednesday? Like, you know, the coach and Alvin said, you know, still to be determined on exactly who's going to play on Wednesday. But I'll take the under. I think it's still a lot of games. Now, injuries can happen. And he's right there. A center goes down. He's the one coming up and playing probably, right?
If the team likes him at center more than Pugh Suter...
which it kind of seems like they do at the moment.
Does that change the conversation?
Do you think they do, or it's just the best place to have him right now?
Might Ratu? Be the best place to have him right now.
Ratu.
Well, I think it's a combination of like Ratu fitting better at center and Suter fitting better on the wing. Like, I just don't know if Suter is a center.
Yeah, I mean...
He was fine there for most of
the
last year.
Yeah, it all depends on who his wingers are. I actually like him better at center if he's going to play a defensive role.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah,
I'll take the under on Ratu.
I'm going over. I feel like there's like some injuries and like maybe barely over, but I'm going over.
Tyler and Langley text in and says good takes, but Ratu is going over. So the Ratu believers, you guys can participate. Text in you hear, like let us know.
He's going over for sure.
All right, there you go. Zach's on it too.
Yeah. Next one, Archdeep Baines, 20 games.
Ooh.
He looked good Friday. He looked good most of training camp. Got better as the preseason games went on, I felt, which is a strong indicator.
I think the basis of the decision is essentially like, where does Archdeep Baines rank in the winger hierarchy when there are injuries or whatever?
And he played 8 games last year. Yeah. And he was one of their, you know, like he was their top point getter too on the team. I know he was second behind Linus Karlsson because he played, you know, one fewer game or whatever. But yeah, 5 more points Karlsson had. Ah, man.
AHL All-Star MVP last year. Like he's already shown it at the AHL level for the most part.
And if you're looking at somebody who's going to play a bottom six role and maybe even play up, like Baines kind of fits the group. I'll say over. I can see him being the first call up on the wing.
Yeah.
And He'll get a bunch of games.
I'm gonna go under. PDG plays a bigger role.
Okay, I'm gonna go.
We'll get to PDG.
Let's get to PDG right now. PDG 9.5 points over or under. This feels disrespectful.
How is it disrespectful? How many points do you think PDG had last year?
I don't know. More than 9.5.
How many points do you think he had? Honestly?
I'm gonna say 14.
Okay, Reach. Do you know already?
Reach has to know. He's got to post it on his wall.
I mean, the guy played. Yeah,
he played 51 games.
He only had like 5 goals, though.
Yeah,
but there was the stretch with like Miller and Besser.
Yeah, he played 51 games. He had 10 points. So like, I don't think 9 is disrespectful, bro. Like, I really don't think 9 is disrespectful.
Hey, Deej.
And that's why he found himself on waivers. That's why like I was kind of shocked at all this talk about someone's going to claim him. Like, yeah, maybe, but his numbers aren't great. He can PK. He can play a checking role, but doesn't have great pace. You know, he's also into his early 30s. The bottom line's not there. Like, he doesn't scream a waiver pickup. He's a good useful player. He's a great pro. Great pro. Again, like, he might end up playing more games than all these prospects by the end of the year. That might happen. But, yeah.
I'm going to say over because, yeah.
You have to.
He's Deej.
Yeah. I'm going over, too. But now I'm much less confident in my over. Next one.
I think we got to fire through these quickly.
Yeah. Let's go Elias Pettersson, 39.5 goals.
So does he get 40 for the first time in his career?
I'm going under.
He didn't hit 40 this year, did he?
No.
No, he hit 39.
I want to say it might have been 34.
I'm going under, but I do think Pettersson hits 95 points. So
yeah, it was a year prior he hit 39. So yeah, he hasn't hit 40 yet.
Under, but Pettersson over 95 points. So okay. It's going to be more in the Apple category for Elias Pettersson this year.
Right. Yeah, I'm taking over on the points. Paul and Kukodlum says, sorry to be negative, I'm taking under 65 points. I mean, that's unless he's injured, that's not happening.
For Pettersson?
Yeah, it's not happening.
That would be incredible.
it's not going to happen. If he's healthy, there's no way it's happening. But hey, listen, you can all have your opinion.
Fire off your takes. Yeah. Next one, Brock Besser, 37.5 goals.
Under.
You're going under.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I feel like there's regression coming for Brock, and so the under feels safer.
Yeah, like the range I looked at was between 35 and 37 is kind of where I see him landing.
Yeah. He's going to be in the low 30s for me this year.
Which is, like, honestly, he gets over 30, even 33, 34. Like, I'm perfectly fine with him being healthy and scoring 30-plus. Like, that's okay.
Canucks are going to have a little bit more spread-out offense this year because of how much they added in the forward group this year. All right, let's get to some of the new guys, hey?
Some of the new guys. Danton Heinen, 38.5 points.
Oh, so he's had over 40 in his career before. He's starting the season on the top line. I'm going to say over for Danton Heinen.
Really? I'm going under. That feels like, feels high.
Yeah, I'll take the.
He's had a 40-point season before. Yeah.
You know, I'll take the over.
I don't know if he sticks in the top six is my main reason, and he's probably not getting like much power play time.
No, probably not a ton.
He's playing second unit, but he's playing with Miller and Besser, so I think he's going to have a strong season between 35 and 40 points. I'm optimistic right now. I'll say over.
Okay.
Okay, next one. Sats boy, Kiefer Sherwood, 14.5 goals.
Oh, Sat, man. How did you not have this at 29.5?
I know. I mean, I cowered.
Or 39.5.
14.5. You know why? Because I needed to hedge. Because I can't say on record he's going to score over 20 goals. But if I say over 14.5,
yeah,
then no matter what he scores, I said I had over 14.5.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's how I'm going on that one. I'm taking the over on Kiefer Sherwood on 14.
Over? What's his career high? Like 10?
12.
12? I'm going under.
I'm going under, too. Let's crank through the rest of these forwards and then move on to the rest. Jake DeBrusk, 34.5 goals.
Oh, man. That's
a good line.
Under.
I guaranteed 30, but I don't know about 35. You know what? Let's go with the over.
Yeah.
I called under for Brock and Petey. I'll say over for DeBrusk.
Dakota Joshua, 0.5 points per game.
Half a point a game for Dakota Joshua. So like potentially like 40 points if he were to play.
Yeah, half a point. I think that's the best way to do it for him.
40-point pace.
40-point pace.
Going to say under.
I'm going to say under too.
Mm, Yeah, I'll say under just because, you know, it's tough coming back. It's but I think that's kind of, if he's at half, I think a big success, if he comes back and he plays at half a point per game, that'd be massive.
A couple more forwards. Let's just do them both. Suter, 29.5 points, and Oman, 4.5 goals.
Under on Suter and under on Oman.
Under on both.
Under on both. I agree. Okay, on to defense. Quinn Hughes, 19.5 goals.
He has a stated goal of getting to 20 this year.
I'm going under. It's so hard to score 20 goals.
The Clapper looked so good on Friday night against Edmonton.
Yeah.
I want to say over. I'm going to say over.
Yeah.
Who wants to sell Quinn
Dare
short?
To dream.
Guy reads a lot. That means he'll score a lot.
Fair enough. Yeah, sure. That is the reasoning.
I kind of have him in the 18-19 range, honestly, looking at it again, so I'll say under.
I'm going to say around 15. Carson Soucy, 64.5 games.
Which kind of would be like a career high, I think, close to it. Like, oof. Or no, yeah, he's played like...
We're betting on healthy Soucy if it's over.
I'm going to be optimistic and say yes.
The D-Corps needs it. Yeah. 74 games for Soucy, so over.
I'm going to go over too. Derek Forbort, 54.5 games.
Over.
Over?
Yeah.
I'm just not a big Forbort guy.
Yeah, who's playing? Brännström?
I like Brännström.
Who's a better penalty killer than Forbort?
I love these conversations.
Who's a better PKer?
I mean, like Carson
Name
Soucy?
The guy on defense that's a better PKer than Forbort.
Tyler Myers?
On the left side.
Carson Soucy?
That's it. That's the one guy.
You need more than one left shot defenseman to play
I think it's
PK
fine.
Minutes.
Quinn Hughes?
All right, I'll say...
You don't want Quinn Hughes playing all those PK minutes.
I'll say over 54.5.
Okay, I'm going under. Tyler Myers, 25.5 points.
He had 29 last year.
That was a lot,
though. It was a lot.
Over on Tyler Myers.
You know what? Yeah. You know, I was going to shade over, too, because like he'll be moving the puck a lot on that pair.
I'm going under.
All right.
I'm sorry. Filip Hronek, 39.5 points.
I'm taking the under.
On Filip? Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Wait. I'm taking the over.
I'm going over.
I'm going over. On
over.
I want to see Hronek score more goals this year, ultimately, but yeah. I think he does get over 40 points again.
Yeah, he's going to play with Quinn a lot. Yeah, okay. He'll rack up points.
Vinny Desharnais, 16 minutes per game.
Over. Tok really likes him.
Yeah, I'll say over now, too.
Okay, under. Thatcher Demko, 39.5 starts onto goalies.
Ooh. If he starts sometime in November, he'll still be able to get there. So, yeah.
I'll say under because I think they'll be ultra conservative, especially with Alvin hinting that they're going to have three goalies at a time. So I see them being ultra conservative with Demko this year.
Shelov's 20 starts.
Ooh.
Yeah. So if Demko's having, say, 38 even, Shelov's has 20, that means 25 for Lankinen.
Yeah.
So who do you think is going to start more games, Lankinen or Shelov's? That's what it comes down to, essentially.
Well, I mean, early it's probably Shelov's, but once Demko's ready, Shelov's maybe goes down to the A just because of his doesn't have to pass through waivers. So that's what makes it an interesting conversation. I'm going to say Lankinen over. Yeah.
Shelov's over, you mean?
Shelov's under.
Okay. Lankinen, 909 save percentage.
Ooh. Over. Canucks are going to be a good defensive team.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think ultimately Shelovs gets under 20 starts and Lankinen gets more.
And then we'll end with this one. Three Canucks players getting over 90 points this season.
So they did it last year. Well, no, they didn't do it last year because Pettersson finished just short of it.
Yes.
They were on pace.
They should have done it last year.
It's Pettersson, Hughes, and Miller.
Yeah.
Over 90 points. Can we see them all getting there? Sat's already a no.
Yeah, I'm going to say no.
No?
Well, I got JT.
He has JT at 86.
I mean,
because it could be like Besser and Pettersson and Hughes.
It's could be.
Could be. I doubt it. But yeah. I think they have two guys in the 90 to 100 range.
Could be Sherwood.
I'm going to say over. I'm going to say yes. They hit the number.
I think so, too. That's it.
All right. That's Central Over-Unders. We're getting ready for the start of the season Wednesday night. Tomorrow we'll have our prediction show, so be tuning in for that. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news, and sports updates all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJs, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcasts, news, and sports you love. For producers Josh and Zach, my co-host Sat, I'm Dan. You've been listening to Canuck Central.